This hour is being brought to you by Menards. Save big money at Menards.
We will rally around Kurt Warner.
Kurt Warner.
Just reserve, you know, your opinions.
That's a wonderful time for us to jump in and say goodbye and then ask for some phone calls from people who watch the game.
Two-time NFL MVP.
They talk about this, the greatest show on turf. Maybe the best offense ever in football.
Super Bowl champion.
Warner to throw. Going deep downfield. Adjusting for it is Isaac Bruce. Touchdown. 73 yards.
Pro Football Hall of Famer.
Not just the NFL Hall of Fame. And I wear that as a badge of honor because without pro football, in all its forms and fashions, I'm not here tonight.
Radio analyst for Westwood One Sports.
The final score, Arizona 17, Los Angeles 15.
Well, it wasn't filled with a lot of fireworks.
NFL Network analyst.
Pat McAfee. Did you play in the World League of American Football?
What, were you in Amsterdam?
I was in Amsterdam.
How'd you guys stay focused?
Walking through the red light district, I stay focused on where that chapel is, baby. Where that chapel is.
Pat, the only red light he saw was on a street light. That's the only one he saw. You know what I mean?
That's Kurt Warner football, baby.
Ladies and gentlemen.
Kurt Warner with Spiegel and Holmes on 670 The Score.
We love our weekly chats with Kurt Warner. They are sponsored by Plumbers 911 Plumbing Emergency. Call the plumbing professionals available 24/7 at 1-833-PLUM-911. And is also brought to you by Busey Bank, building business, growing wealth since 1868. Kurt, thanks so much for joining us.
You got it. How are you guys doing?
We are good, Kurt. We are good. Good job finding the chapel.
You're good. Okay. I wasn't sure.
Oh.
I wasn't sure how you guys be doing today, but I'm glad you guys are good.
No, it's a good point by you. We're not really good. I was going with like niceties at the beginning of a conversation. It is an angry and feisty town. It's an angry It's an angry and feisty show. And Bears fans are pissed off and embarrassed. You've got to understand that. Did you ever have a player on any of your teams with Dick Vermeil or otherwise who flaunted responsibility in the way that Tyreek Stevenson did, taunting with the fans and having his back to the line of scrimmage before the ultimate play of the game? And if so, how was that person punished? Trying to figure out what the punishment ought to be for Matt Eberflus to try and show some accountability this week for the Bears.
I don't ever recall anything like that. In the course of a play, when the game was still in the balance, like that. You know, I mean, I'm sure there were some times when, you know, the game was in essence over and, you know, but still time on the clock and somebody was acting like an idiot and, you know, taunting the fans or taunting the other sideline or something like that. But I can't ever recall one when there's a play that, you know, where the game hangs in the balance and doing that. Punishment, I think it's one of those things where I get it. I understand why everybody's calling for a punishment. I'm not sure there's a punishment as much as an example made, you know, a young player, and what this means and how guys in the locker room are going to see him, I think is probably punishment enough, you know, bringing it to light, all the stuff that, you know, is going to be said about him over the next couple of days is probably punishment enough. But I think it's something that every team around the league will be showing their players and using as what not to do. And, you know, I mean, we've seen millions of these over the years, is that you don't really talk about that until something happens, until we see somebody do it. And then it's like, guys, don't ever do this, you know, like finish the game, do your job. And, and who knows, I don't know if that really had anything to do with how the last game or last play played out and all that stuff. But, I just think it's something that's going to be used. And, and I think he'll be dealing with enough punishment that you don't have to bench him or whatever, because there's been a lot of guys that have done stupid things on the football field that have hurt a football team. This is another one. And you make an example of it. You teach the young kid through it, and you hope that he and nobody on your team ever makes that mistake again.
Put yourself in Jaden Daniels' spot for those last two plays. Would you have run what he ran to give them the opportunity to get the Hail Mary?
I mean, yeah, I think it's a, you know, it's a great move and a great thought. You know, anytime you're in that situation where you know that you're not throwing a Hail Mary from that distance. And so, you know, the goal is always, you know, it's like at the end of a half where you come up with a particular play call and you kind of have aspects to it. You know, you send everybody to the sideline. If they're covering the sideline, I'm dropping back and just throwing it over their head and living for another day, even though we're trying to gain that 5-7 yards to get in better field goal range. You know, I don't know what their play call is there where, you know, we've had that before where we're going up and we're kind of running a Hail Mary in that situation. Like, we're going to do the best that we can because 6 seconds isn't a lot of time. But if you guys come up to the line of scrimmage and there's nobody within 10 or 12 yards of the line of scrimmage, just be ready for the football and I'm going to flip it out there to you and you're going to catch it and get what you can in a few seconds and get out of bounds and put us in a better situation. So, you know, I think that's something you always talk about. It doesn't come up very often, but I thought it was a great heads up play by Washington to see, recognize that by the young quarterback and McLaurin to get a completion and put them in a better position to make the last play. And obviously it had a huge effect.
We were impressed with Jaden Daniels yesterday. Want to know what you think of him so far. He obviously has elite scrambling skills, you know, in terms of the history of the league. We're talking about a top five or top 10 at the most guy ever as a quarterback, which was evident. But what did you think of him as a decision maker as well?
Well, I mean, I don't know if yesterday was his best game. Obviously, the Bears have a really good defense. But, you know, when you put it as a whole with what he's done here as a rookie this year, I think he's been phenomenal in terms of his decision-making, his playmaking ability. And then what I've loved the most is that he doesn't put the ball in harm's way, is that he's just very, very good and judicious with the ball, that if he doesn't see it and it doesn't seem clear, he tucks it in and makes a play. And, you know, obviously it helps when you have unique ability like he does to elude guys and scramble and do that stuff. But still, it doesn't really matter who they are. We've seen a lot of really good athletes in this league that come in and they want to continue to try to make the play with their arm. And when they don't see it, they try to jam it in and make plays that way. And he just hasn't done it all year long. I mean, he's so good with his decision-making that's been the thing that has just wowed me. I mean, I haven't seen a game where he's thrown the ball into harm's way numerous times. It's just been really, really impressive. So you put the whole thing together, and then the fact that he's doing enough to win, and then he's making plays like that yesterday, and you just kind of shake your head like, my gosh, you know, is this for real? You know, is this who we're going to see for the entirety of his career? If we are, this is going to be a really, really special career because, you know, we've seen guys like Aaron Rodgers that are great decision makers in terms of not turning the ball over and throwing touchdowns. And we've seen, you know, again, like an Aaron Rodgers that's buys time and makes so many plays, you know, off schedule. And now you've got a guy that also has this unique athletic ability to tie to those two things. So, man, it's really been impressive, you know, what he's done week in and week out. And he hasn't really had a, you know, we call a stinker. He hasn't had one of those bad games where you go, oh, there he is coming back to earth. No, he's been the same guy every single week. And that's really, really impressive for a young guy that's been asked to do as much as he's been asked to do.
On the flip side, for 3.5 quarters, it was a struggle bus for Caleb Williams. What did you see Washington do to get him uncomfortable?
Well, I mean, there weren't a lot of great opportunities for Caleb. I know when you watch a TV copy and you see a quarterback holding it and not really being able to make plays down the field, we're automatically want to put it on the quarterback. I just thought they covered, you know, a lot of their concepts really, really well. And there just wasn't a lot of, you know, open big opportunities there. I didn't think Caleb missed a bunch of stuff in this game. I just don't think there was a lot of chances for him. And so, you know, give them credit. I'm not sure, you know, what specific things, you know, there was, you know, times that they went press coverage and there wasn't a lot of, you know, open space there. You know, other times that just the play designs weren't attacking the coverage real well and getting guys open from that perspective. you know, Caleb missed a few things along the way that I thought he could have hit if he was on time and, you know, it was really clear with what he was seeing. But I don't think this was by any means just a bad quarterback game. I just think Washington's defense really did a nice job of, you know, slowing down the Bears offense. And it wasn't until they got the run game going late in the game where they were able to make some passes off of it. But it was just, you know, well done, you know, across the board by Washington's defense.
There was some inaccuracy issues for Caleb in the first half, especially throwing the ball behind Roma Dunze once, behind DJ Moore once. There was a little wide receiver screen on the left side to Keenan Allen that was overthrown by a good 4 or 5 yards. And he slid short of the first down marker at one point and copped to that after the game. He looked kind of unsteady from our naked eye. Did you see any of that and have any thoughts on that?
Yeah, you guys were naked. That's a problem. and what I mean by that is you got to see the big picture is that, you know, the one you were talking to Rome, I agree. He could have made that throw. He was actually looking for the hook underneath it and he thought he was going to have it. And the linebacker there read it and just came shooting across the tight end's face where he was almost ready to throw it. And this guy comes flashing through there and he tried to recover over the top. And, you know, it was the right decision based off of what he saw. He just didn't really get his feet set again, left the ball behind it. On the screen that I think you're talking about, the one that went 5 yards over Keenan's head, their cornerback did a great job. DJ was out there going to block the cornerback. And as he popped up to throw the screen, the cornerback shot across the line of scrimmage, whereas if he makes the normal throw to the screen, that's picked off and probably goes for sticks. He tries to adjust and flip it up over the top of that corner who had shot that block. And, you know, again, it's kind of a bang-bang play, and he sees it, so he recognized it really well. He just couldn't adjust the throw well enough to kind of drop it over with that touch kind of bubble throw and ends up throwing it too hard. So, again, that's what I mean is that you got to watch the tape and understand the big picture of what's out there and why some of those things happened. And yeah, we'd like to think you can adjust a little bit better and slow yourself down to make a couple of those throws, but they weren't as easy as, oh my gosh, he airmailed that screen by 5 yards. What's he doing? It wasn't as much that as, again, you give credit to Washington for doing a nice job with a couple of those plays where, you know, they just read it and jumped it and forced Caleb to kind of adjust midstream, and he just didn't do it quite well enough.
Wow, a little bit of role reversal here. Usually you're telling me I'm not watching the tape when I say good things about Caleb. Now you're telling me I'm not watching the tape when I say bad things about Caleb.
Well, maybe the bottom line is you need to watch tape.
Oh, like, look on. At that. Look at
I
that.
Mean, if that's the case, well, I'm just wondering.
Yeah, whatever the mighty Kurt Warner says, folks.
well, Kurt, I want to ask you to kind of follow up on that. So does that tell you that Dan Quinn and Joe Witt Jr. did a really good job of scouting the Bears?
Yeah. You know, that's always a tough one. Like, that's the one thing that I don't do. Maybe you guys do better than me when it comes to watching the tape. Is like, I can't study a team so much that I fully can get their tendencies down, you know, on a weekly basis because I'm watching all the teams in the league and that sort of thing. So I can't say, oh, they've become predictable, so the defense figured it out. I'm not sure that's the case. I think sometimes, yeah, you're going to have, you know, normal routes that you run, but like say the one to Rome is that they did a nice job of jumping the hook, but Rome was open. So that's kind of the read. If that guy comes down on the hook, you come over the top on the cross to Rome. Now it just, you know, they jumped it so quick. That I think it kind of shocked Caleb where he didn't reset his feet and make the throw over the top, even though the right read. The screen, you know, you'll see that happen is that, you know, with all these RPOs they're being run now in the NFL, you know, a lot of people have those just bubble screens and stuff off of their RPOs. And so corners are getting better at kind of, you know, when they're in those situations and it's kind of more of a run formation or whatever, they're sitting there looking with their eyes back at the quarterback. So as soon as the quarterback pulls up and looks that direction, they're going to shoot that. So I don't know if it's so much, oh, they knew what the Bears were going to do, as much as it's, this is all over the league. This is how we're going to play it. And if I get a good read, I want to jump it real quick, and maybe I get an interception or blow it up or make a tackle behind the line of scrimmage, more than it's, oh, the Bears do this every time they're in this formation. We got a beat on it, and you know, and we're ahead of the game in that regard.
When you watch what Shane Waldron does it look cohesive to you? Do the run games look like they match the pass games? Or sometimes offensive coordinators can seem like they're sort of play collectors and going through the Rolodex. How cohesive does it look to you?
Yeah, I mean, that's not something that jumps out to me. You know, there are some teams in the league where, you know, they get into a certain formation and you're kind of going, oh, here comes a run, or here they're going to throw it. That hasn't been a thought that's popped into my head watching the Bears on a weekly basis that, oh, yeah, I know what they're doing. Mm-hmm. And again, I'm not studying them to the point where, you know, I'm going back over and over it numerous times to look at, oh, what's the formation for the run? And did they have a pass to connect to it? To me, it's more of a feel. The way I watch the tape is just, do I feel like, you know, when they're coming up in situations or formations, I can tell what they're going to do based on that. And I haven't got that feel from the Bears.
As we look at the Bears now, Kurt, I know that you are locked in with the next thing that you're doing. We're obviously locked into what's happening with the Bears. There's been a lot of guys in the locker room who have been open about what went wrong on plays. They've even named names. They've talked about why they thought Tyreek Stevenson was being disrespectful to the game. I think that it's possible that all of this could end up being good. But from the teams that I've covered, this feels like the beginning of things being bad. How do you make sure that honesty doesn't turn into resentment and fracture a locker room?
Well, I mean, I think the first part of it is you have pros, and you want to make sure you have pros on your team that want to be great. And I think anytime you want to be great, you're happy to listen to things that can help you be great. You know, so that's the first part of it is, do you have a locker room full of guys that want to be told, you know, that want to be taught, that want to get constructive criticism, as opposed to, you know, want to feel like they have all the answers and they get offended when anybody tells them they do anything wrong. So I think it starts with the perspective of the player and where do they stand. And then the other side of it is, where are the other players coming from? So are the other players, do you know that they've got your best interest in mind? Like, are they saying those things because they want our team to be better, or are they saying those things out of, you know, kind of a selfish, like, oh, it's the defense's fault, oh, it's this guy's fault, instead of taking ownership themselves? So one thing I've always felt was accountability by the individual is always key. So, for example, when I would go into a film room, one of the natural human things to do is to try to excuse away the mistakes that you make. So, you know, you watch the film and you watch the film after the fact, and then you kind of talk yourself into, well, maybe I did that or made that decision because this guy was a little short on his route, or this guy was, you know, did this or whatever. And, you know, I learned really early on, like, that's not going to make anybody better. It's going to make you feel better for 5 minutes because you're excusing yourself to everybody else. But you know the truth. You know why you threw that. You know what your decision was. And it might have been a bad decision. Take accountability. Stand up in front of the room and go, hey, that one's on me, guys. I was thinking this, or tell your coach that. And what that normally does is it eludes accountability from other people. Oh, wow. Kurt's, you know, telling us when he makes the mistake. Now I can, you know, take accountability for my mistake. Or when Kurt calls me out for a mistake, I'm going to be more accepting to that mistake because I understand he just wants to get it right. He wants to get it right when he makes a mistake. He wants to get it right when I make a mistake. And so we are in this together. You know, Todd Haley was my offense coordinator when I was here. And, you know, he got known for having this fiery personality, and he would get on people. And, you know, my kids, even to this day, that's the one interaction they remember, because I was very calm and level-headed on the sideline. But they always point that out. Hey, remember that time with Todd Haley when you got in his face and you were screaming and yelling at him? You remember that, Dad? And so they want to make that quite often about Todd and his, you know, personality and what he elicited in different people. But what I always loved about Todd was even when he got on me and coached me hard and we had those interactions, I always knew that Todd wanted me to be great and Todd wanted to push us to be great. So because I knew that, yeah, it would still lead to fiery interaction at times on the field when we're competing and we're having those moments, but it never carried over anywhere else other than, hey, I appreciate you coaching me hard. I appreciate you getting on me and pushing me because you know what I'm capable of and you want us to be great. And I knew that from him. So I was never offended and I never pointed the finger and I never went to my kids and, hey, that was all about Todd Haley. You shouldn't. No, I was like, I respected it because he was willing to challenge me. You know, even a guy that won a couple, MVPs and gone to a number of Super Bowls, he wasn't afraid to coach me and challenge me in different instances. Times I was wrong, times he was wrong, but I appreciated that about him. So when you talk about the locker room, if I know somebody has my best interest in mind, whether it's a coach or a player, and they're calling me out and challenging me to be better, I'm going to go try to be better. I'm not looking to point the finger back and go, well, what about the play where you did this? No, I understand where their heart is and where the direction of that comment comes from. And that to me is what makes a healthy locker room and what allows teams to grow and become better is knowing I'm going to hold myself accountable, A, and B, I know that my teammates only want the best for me. And that makes a healthy locker room, in my opinion.
Great stuff from a wealth of experience in the Hall of Famer's career. Let's hope it turns that way. Thanks so much, Kurt. We'll talk to you next week.
Sounds good, guys.
All right, that's Kurt Warner joining us here on the Spiegel and Holmes Show. All right, phone lines are open. We'll talk to Mark Grody at 4 o'clock, and you'll hear from Tyreek Stevenson and Kevin Byard and Cole Kmet with some impactful stuff. But right now, we want to hear from you at 312-644-6767. You can text as well and call. An embarrassing day, embarrassing game for Matt Eberflus. What kind of culture and accountability have you built when your team is that undisciplined? Let's discuss. Want to hear from you next on The Score.
The Bears.
The Bears.
The Bears.
Let me ask you, if you had a hot dogger,
Ditka.
That was amazing. I loved it.
But Coach Ditka recently turned 90. He's down in Florida. We wish him all the best. Here's a 1st and 10.
Highlight courtesy of CBS's best team of broadcasters for NFL football games.
Number one team. Lawrence Holmes.
Top of the profession.
Nonplussed on that one.
Six quarterbacks, man. Yeah. They're out here getting money.
Yeah, they are. Yesterday, though, the roller coaster of emotions of that day, that's why we're addicted to sports, man. Just like the up, it was a lot of down, and then it was up, and then it was down again, but it was like, I had to change the vibe at one point and go to the couch with the wife and put Twitter away and just like try to change it. Like just riding the highs and lows of that thing was intense yesterday.
I think that the Bears themselves are probably going through that too, where you have this moment where you're like, we're going to be 5-2.
Yeah, man.
Things are looking great. We're going to take this trip to Arizona. We're going to be 6-2
mm-hmm.
after that trip to Arizona. We're right in this. We're going to be a playoff team.
Uh-oh.
To now, we have to win in Arizona next week or else. Like, the division looks really good, and it kind of doesn't matter who's quarterbacking Green Bay. They just win games. You know, there's all sorts of stuff. By the way, you still good?
On the Packers sweep?
Yeah.
Yeah, we'll talk about it as the week progresses.
That's what I thought
would
happen.
Yeah, I'm fine. I'm fine. Mm. I'm totally fine. We got a lot to deal with.
Okay. I just wanted to check in.
Thank you.
Let's go to Thomas. Hey, Thomas, you're on The Score.
Hey, guys. Thanks for having me on. So the one point I had to bring up in my initial thought, you know, through these 3 years with the Eberflus era is, you know, the initial reaction is to blame Eberflus and Stevenson because they're the guys that are in their field. But when do we start pointing the finger at the fact that it seems like no one else really cares about the on-the-field product in the Bears organization? I mean, Kevin Warren is more focused about his day in the life articles and the stadium that's never going to get built.
You know what? I hate to stop you. And I'm all for climbing up the ladder of blame. This ain't today. Like, this isn't the day to point up at Kevin Warren.
He was brought here to get the stadium done.
Like, if you want to, like, that's cool. But this ain't the day for that. It's pretty clear whose fault yesterday was.
You can point to Ryan Poles.
Sure.
And we can talk about why he hired Matt Eberflus and then why Matt Eberflus.
Why he retained.
Yes. Well, and then why he retained Matt Eberflus and why Matt Eberflus hired Shane Waldron and the fact that all three of them share the same agent. You can wonder if Trace Armstrong is the shadow president of the Chicago Bears. So we can go up the ladder in those kinds of ways. But Kevin Warren is a non-starter for me today as well.
Let's go out to, let's see, who we got here? Oh, is it Shad? Oh, hey, Shad, you're
Shad,
on the score.
Uh-oh.
Shad?
Shad, uh-oh.
What's up, Shad? Uh-oh, Shad's having a little problem. Put him on.
The cellular gods don't want to hear from Shad just yet.
I'm going to put him on hold. Let's go out to Jerry. Hey, Jerry, you're on the score.
Ryan Poles was an offensive lineman, correct?
Yes, sir.
Correct.
I mean, this guy from Yale, he can't pass block a launcher. I mean, he was Caleb Williams. I thought he was almost ready to go into the concussion protocol. All the times he was getting hit, thanks to this lineman, and then the rest of the linemen. How does he not be able to evaluate his own position? I don't understand that.
You know my theory on this. My theory on this is that Poles and Cunningham continue to scout, draft, and try to develop linemen that remind them of them. Smart ones who just need to be coached up and given a chance. They believe that they can find those guys because that's what they think they could have been. And so they don't like spend big-time assets on offensive linemen because they think they can find it. They have the arrogance of first-timers finding themselves like Phil Emery found Mark Trestman because he reminded him of himself. So sometimes that's the way it goes in pro sports. That's part of what I think is happening.
Let's go out to Dan. Hey, Dan, you're on the score.
I was just wondering if anybody realized that yesterday Shane Waldron called three quarterback draws yesterday. I mean, it's Caleb Williams, not Russell Wilson. And 2 weeks before that, the amount of RPOs he's running, it's like he still has Russell Wilson as quarterback. Is he going to, you know, I don't want to be running with Caleb Williams.
I want to select when to run with Caleb Williams, but you're right. A lot of the game plan looked like a Justin Fields game plan where you're like, oh, well, then we got and while Caleb is capable of running and making plays with his feet, he would prefer, and I think overall the Bears would prefer that he win from the pocket because that was the whole point of moving on from Justin is you want someone who's going to command the offense from the pocket. It's easier to get big chunk yards through the air than it is with your feet.
How palpable was the difference in terms of quickness and foot speed between Jaden Daniels and Caleb Williams yesterday?
Yeah, I think he's a more skilled straight line runner. I don't want to act like Caleb is out there just as a bystander, though. He's a pretty skilled runner, too.
He's a skilled scrambler and time buyer. Jaden Daniels is a yards gainer when he needs to be.
It also just kind of looks better, too, because he's longer.
He's more fluid, right? As a runner, without a doubt.
So it looks like Caleb's got to grind for those yards, uh-huh. Where basically Jaden Daniels, that jump in the air to avoid the tackle and land in stride and get up the field that he did on the side, that was some amazing bleep.
Unbelievable stuff. But the second down quarterback draw that Caleb runs, and oh, he's just a Darren Payne shoestring tackle away from busting it, was something. And then Waldron decides to go right back to it. Why that one going right back to it for the second consecutive play?
They won't be expecting it.
That's for sure.
That's why, Speaks. Adam's on the south side. Hey, Adam, you're on the score.
Hey, guys. Love your new show.
Thanks
for taking my call. So, yeah, obviously horrible, horrible loss yesterday. And the thing that sucks the most, I guess, for me is the, I don't know, realization or, I guess, acceptance on my end that this coaching staff really, truly does suck. And, the writing's on the wall now. There's no way that at the end of the year they don't they don't all get fired. And it just sucks because you want some continuity for once. Like, I was just hoping, like, give Caleb some continuity. The team can grow together, but it just seems pretty obvious that this will have to, you know, turn over once again at the end of the year.
And well, maybe they can figure it out, though. Like, look, I think that I've seen enough from the head coach, but maybe through the power of there being honesty and them being able to talk through some of this stuff, maybe it gets figured out. It's very possible that we can see a better example of what the Bears look like against Arizona, but I understand your frustration and I share it.
Zooming out and having the kind of existential dread that you're about to go through the head coach coordinator changeover thing again is grim. It is grim to get there, and it's a level of cynicism I have not wanted to allow. It's easy to feel that today, and I understand where the caller's coming from. I'm not allowing myself to get all the way there. But we've already admitted that he's the fourth best coach in the division. And now
he did nothing to move up the power rankings.
I don't know if he's got a shot to move up the power rankings.
Even with O'Connell losing two games in a row, you still go, oh, better coach.
Yes. Yeah. And you believe, I mean, I said it in the tease, what kind of culture do you have? What kind of culture do you have when we're trying to talk about establishing and teaching accountability this far into year three? What the hell kind of culture have you actually built if we're talking about that still needing to happen?
Why don't we take a break and we'll come back and take some more of your phone calls. 312-644-6767. I see Shad got the cell thing kind of figured out. Mm-hmm. So we can talk with him. He's one of our favorites.
Yeah, we should. And we're going to hear from players at the top of the hour. I know there's some Matt Eberflus on the Hail Mary. There's Matt Eberflus on some other stuff that I'm not sure if people have heard either. So we should try and find a way to squeeze that in.
Stick around. We are listening to you now, the Score listener, the Bears fan. 312-644-6767. Spiegel and Holmes, who are with you until 6 on the Score.
I'm a controversial figure. Things like that happen. I am very controversial.
Who was more controversial, you or Lil Durk?
Uh-oh. Hey, man. Lil Durk, you know, he was pretty present in Bears camp at times. So, but, you know, I don't have a lot of info on Lil Durk at the moment. But he does have some issues, doesn't he?
Very controversial.
Yes. Yeah.
Lil Durk.
So,
is that just
gentlemen,
me?
Don't
he was in London, wasn't he? Didn't he go to London?
I don't know who Lil Durk is. Sorry.
Come on, Olin.
I don't. I'm sorry. Yeah,
Google that one, buddy.
I got to Google
that. Yeah, you got to Google that, Olin. It's a all very right, interesting will. Situation going for that.
I'm a kid from Hawaii, man. I'm sorry. I'll yeah.
It's a very, very sad tale. Wallow tried to warn Durk. Really tried to warn him.
He has been very close to the Bears. It's not wrong.
No, he's been very upfront. And I think people would be surprised at who forged that relationship between Lil Durk and the Bears. It wasn't Virginia.
He came up, that guy who forged it came up last segment, as a matter of fact.
It's possible.
Uh-huh.
We're talking Bears and what happened in yesterday's game. Let's get back to your phone calls. Let's talk with Shad. Hey, Shad, you're on the Score.
Fellas, I hope y'all can hear me this time.
We got you.
Good to hear from you, man. I wish it was in better circumstance, fellas. Speaks.
Yo.
The vibes ain't what they need to be, baby. You know, this was supposed to be the one thing that couldn't happen. And I honestly know why Shane Waldron was shaking. He obviously got some type of cartilage transplant from Alan Williams over the break. This has to stop soon. Has to stop now. At some point, Eberflus has an opportunity for the fact that he hired 6 offensive coaches to do what he didn't do with Luke Getsy because he wasn't afforded the opportunity. You're supposed to have guys on this staff that can call plays outside of just Waldron. If your players are coming to you like Justin Fields and the offense was towards the end of last season or mid-season, you have to pivot, understanding that your job is on the line. And to mention that you had another quarterback, a rookie, who was playing with bruised ribs, and we didn't see an assault of blitzing that would go against his typical tendency. I am so sick of the Charmin that comes out of Hallis Hall while Eberflus has been head coach. I ran through my entire season worth of edibles by half.
Sean, it's too many. That's too many. That's too many damn edibles, man.
That's too many edibles.
Josh Blackwell did blitz a couple times in place of Kyler Gordon, but he couldn't track down Jaden. I think Kyler was a big absence yesterday.
Yeah, it's one of those things that we're trying to explain it like throughout the week. And like if you heard all of our guests be like, No, he's the most important player on their defense.
It's a big deal, and you could tell it because Kyler is athletic enough to find Jaden and stay with Jaden, and they might have done some things differently. Yeah, if they want to give Thomas Brown a shot playing calls, or calling plays, I should say, I got no problem with that. Thomas Brown called some plays in Carolina last year.
You're probably not going to do
probably,
that,
it's probably too soon. It's probably too soon, but you don't want to wait too long. And, it's a feel thing, and Shane Waldron's feel seems to be bad.
It seems that way to me.
Mm-hmm. Before we get to Mark Rohde, we're going to take some more calls for sure. But this is Matt Eberflus earlier today on Tyreek Stevenson, because we're going to talk about the blame game and how to punish Tyreek Stevenson. Here's Matt Eberflus talking about that from earlier today, and then we'll take a few more of your calls before Groats.
Matt, we know that Tyreek apologized for the situation where he seemed to be drawing with fans a little bit and then got back on the play. What do you make of just that whole sequence where it didn't seem like he was locked in that moment, which was a critical one?
Yeah, I talk to the players all the time about it. You know, it's great to have passion, and I think it's great to have that great enthusiasm for the game. I said, but it also comes to a point where your emotions go over the top, and then you lose focus. And you got to have to be able to have that balance. If you're that type of player that plays with great intensity, like Tyreek does, to be able to have that so it doesn't go over the top and you lose your focus and your concentration. That's for anybody, you know, and each position is different. You know, obviously you can play at a higher temperature, you know, if you're playing D tackle or something like that or inside, but you got to really wire into your responsibilities there as you go forward.
What's the proper discipline for a player like that in a situation?
Meaning what, Courtney?
It seems like there should be consequences for an action like that. How do you see that?
Yeah, you know, we'll look at that. Again, those things are always going to be internal as we work with our players, as we go forward. And it's really about development, making everybody better. So we'll get to that answer as we go through the week. But again, he did address the team in a team meeting room today. It was a really good moment for him to be able to do that. It showed responsibility and accountability.
Matt, just one follow-up on that, and then I have a separate question. As your coaching staff is recognizing some of the extracurricular stuff that Tyreek's engaged in before the snap is happening, how is there a possibility of potentially relaying that information? You guys had timeouts left. Was there a way to get that play stopped so that you could maybe get everybody gathered, or is that just out of the realm of possibility there?
Yeah, you know, so from our vantage point, everybody was lined up in the correct position, and then we just were ready to go. You know, we already had showed those diagrams, before. We were ready to go for that play. Like I said, we've practiced that, multiple times, a couple of times a week and multiple times since we've been here. So, again, it comes down to wiring into your responsibilities.
Just wanted to make sure the listeners heard that and knew it and let it inform the conversation and inform when you hear from the players with Mark Rohde at the top of the hour.
Let's go to the west side and let's talk with Zach. Hey, Zach, you're on the score.
What's going on, fellas? Great show. I'm glad you guys sound real good together, real professional and everything. Real great show. It's time to bring in Bill Belichick. It's time to bring in a supreme coach who knows how to get the best out of his players while keeping them disciplined. You know what I'm saying? While being able to, continue to groom a Tyreek Stevenson. Don't everybody want to get down on him. That kid is a super talent. You know what I mean? He made a mistake. Players make mistakes. It was crucial. But, that team to be down 9-0 half the game, and we have to make some heroics in the second half. We've seen that for decades, guys, of Chicago offense that just barely gets in on the second half. First half, we all looking crazy like, dang, what, we waited Sunday for this? We waited 2 weeks on the bye week for this? So it's time to put serious coaching with what seems to like serious front office, because Ryan Poles have done a hell of a job, him and his staff, of putting really good players in place.
I think, especially on the defensive side of the ball, Bill Belichick will bring a discipline. He's a defensive coach. He'll hire the right offensive coach, and you'll be in a better position coming in next year.
I don't know if there is evidence to support that last point that you made.
I think his media career is burgeoning quite nicely.
I think when you look at what's happened to the Patriots post-Brady, it makes you wonder how much of a role did he play. And I know as far as the X and O's is, you don't have to worry about that. But part of the problem with hiring Bill Belichick is he wants to also be the guy in charge of player personnel.
I don't think he's going to get that. But
I don't think so either.
I do hope that he's got, with his 8 or 9 different media jobs, that those are all too difficult to disentangle from, and he never comes back to the NFL coaching ranks.
Obviously, yeah. A terrible play by Stevenson. He has no idea what's going on and runs over there and jumps up and volleyballs it up in the air for a game-losing play. It was terrible.
He has been on the Bears, and I give him credit for that. He has stayed on the Bears. Okay, Mark Grody has been getting sound from all the people that you want to hear from, including Tyreek Stevenson. What is he up? Because remember, Tyreek did not talk to the media yesterday. He did talk today. So don't go anywhere, because you're about to hear from him and a bunch of other people up at Hallis Hall trying to make sense of it all. Bears lose, and we're discussing it. Spiegel at Holmes here with you until 6 on The Score.